TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, cadet.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect a kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Why should we care more about Mars than we do our own planet?
We shouldn't. Of course we should care about social imperatives. But in the US alone, we spend $1 trillion each year on the military. And mostly in case the countries represented here decide to blow each other off the face of the Earth. This mission, it cost a fraction of that. As we work together, repurposing those same tools of destruction for discovery.
This very moment, there's a team of astronauts on the moon mining polar ice caps for fuel and water.
Water that will be pumped into the hull of our ship to shield us from radiation, allowing us to travel safely from the moon to Mars.
Reaching Mars might prove to be the greatest achievement, not only for science, but for the future of our planet.
And not to mention one hell of a ride.
Yeah, you can wipe the tears from your eyes now. That's a way all episodes of season one are streaming now on Netflix. James Dempsey joins us once again. Afternoon, James. I saw. I was trying to figure out whether this is going to be recommissioned. They haven't announced a season two. But somebody, I saw one headline describing it as Grey's Anatomy in space, which is very unfair to Grey's Anatomy.
I think that is very unfair to Grey's Anatomy because, you know, Grey's Anatomy has been on the air for, I don't know, 15, 16 seasons, something insane. And if you rewatch it, it began as a like mid-season replacement. So it replaced a cancelled show. And the first 2-3 seasons of Grey's Anatomy are cracking. They're really fun.
Mm.
And this isn't fun, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like, it's actually, you know, it's quite dour. And to be honest with you, there was a show about 2 years ago with Sean Penn, which was almost identical in tone. It was called The First. It was written by Bo Willimon of the House of Cards reboot fame or infame.
Right? Yes, at this point.
And that was all about the lead up to the launch. And it was this very ponderous, miserable drama about like family strife and all that. And this is, you know, well, the one thing is a criticism I had about that show when I watched it 2 years ago was like kind of all the good stuff is going to happen in space, right? I don't really care about the life back on Earth. And this, they blast off at the end of the first episode, but actually they could have done with a bit more of the preamble because once they get into space, it's a bit like, here's the problem we have this week. Has this stopped working? Oh,
yeah.
What is happening this time, right?
Yeah, I've watched the entire series. And halfway through, that became so feckin' tedious because you could just say, no, you're not going to die. You know why? Because you're sitting beside Hilary Swank. That's why you're not going to die.
And I watched it for a bit of like COVID escapism. And there was then this one scene where they're all donning face masks. And I was like, oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, and the face masks were really, they were like a combination of a shield and a face mask, but providing no protection.
Absolutely. We've all become experts in PPE in the last 5 months. Now, I will say it is eminently watchable, right? Because they have filled it with plenty of stuff going on, right? They take off fairly quickly and then they're going through space. And as I said, there's a problem of the week that needs to be surmounted. And it's a very international mission. So Hilary Swank is the commander. She's Emma Green, who's the level-headed one with family strife back home. And she is sort of the commander of a UN Security Council type gathering of astronauts, including two old Cold War enemies, you know, China and Russia, and then a Brit who's also Ghanaian and Jewish, and an Indian. And between all five of them, there is plenty of backstabbing and, well, that's not quite true. There is a bit of backstabbing, but it's not juicy either. It's not like tension. It's not like you savor the kind of machinations that are going on.
Mm.
Because the way I kind of thought about it was, I thought it was very odd. I thought it was an odd choice to blast off into space so quickly. Because the truth is, the space part is boring, right?
Yeah.
They're sitting around, you know, they're on an 8-month journey to Mars. I haven't gone the distance. I presume they get to Mars. I'm not sure. I'm sure.
Oh, you haven't watched the whole thing?
I haven't seen the whole
thing. I won't spoil it for you, but,
right?
You know.
I've gotten halfway. I imagine
Hilary Swank and all that.
I imagine there's a few more bumps before they get to Mars, no matter what. And But so obviously the idea of an 8-month space journey is probably would be really, really boring. And admittedly, it would be very boring television to make 8 episodes about how boring it is being on the trip to Mars. But even one episode about how boring it is to Mars might have worked well. And a few more episodes about how they selected the crew or how the training they underwent or all that kind of thing might have lent it a bit more. Where it actually lost me was in the very opening episode. There's a scene right at the end, well, towards the end anyway, where they're where they have got to the moon, which is a midpoint. They're launching from the moon on their way to Mars, and they just, you know, the team turns to Hillary and says, "Oh, they just want you to say something to the people back home at Earth." And she's like, "What'll I say? Oh, I don't know what to say." And comes out with this like perfectly drafted statement that is, you know, completely and utterly written. It's supposed to be off the cuff, but it's completely obviously written by someone, or it would have been written by someone. It would have been more interesting to mine the idea that this is a, you know, I think it's set in 2026. This would be a social media event, right?
Yeah.
And it would be managed to the GIF, right? Like it would be micromanaged and the astronauts would be told exactly what to say. It would have been drafted and redrafted and so on. And that actually would make for a compelling drama, right? Rather than this perfect female astronaut who can have it all, right? Yeah. But can she have it all? Yeah. No, because then there's family strife back at home. And that goes to ridiculous levels as well. I mean,
oh, yeah. Yeah, and one like major strand of that is just conveniently forgotten about halfway through and you never kind of get an answer on that.
So, yeah, it's not bad television. But it's not interesting television. It's just fine.
No, I thought it got better and as it went on, only because they dialed down like the amount of saccharine crap in it over the first 3 or 4. All the I love yous became unendurable, really.
What also struck me as well was when I Googled it, you know, Google prompts you for all the other things people also looked at, and there was the first got one season. There was there was another one called there's basically every single serious drama about space travel only ever lasts one season.
How
so
interesting.
I cannot see this getting a second one.
Yeah, unlike this series. the other thing was and they did the kind of unexpected thing that, you know, there were episodes where you got everyone's backstory. But you were told in the first episode that these people had trained together for 2 years, yet they seemed to barely know each other. Like, you know, knowing each other's names was the best they could manage. And there was this, every episode there was, I didn't know that about you. Wow, you think you might have mentioned that. and, you know, the English guy, he's been training for 2 years, but he's still making out like he just got on a spaceship for the first time.
And he's like the most bumbling, polite Englishman in the first episode as well. It's a bit trite, really.
It is a bit now, and there is bits where they all kind of lose it a bit, which was actually good to see. But but even still, you know, some of the stuff was. But you're right; it was watchable. I watched the whole thing.
Yeah,
you know, I watched it and hated it at the same time. So you know, that was kind of fun. Right, a few bits of TV news. 2 and a Half Men are having some sort of political row. So, one of the stars of it, at least.
You know what I thought about this was it's so rare to have an argument where you both hate both sides of the argument and have to agree and hate both sides of the argument at the same time. So John Cryer, who was the man who was not Charlie Sheen or the boy, he must be living in Florida because he was tweeting about a House of Representatives Republican politician, a man named Matt Gaetz, who is John Cryer has said is like has aligned himself with white supremacists and has attempted to influence federal witnesses and done all of the things we now expect are normal of Republican politicians. And in responding to the tweet, Matt Gaetz quote tweeted him and said, Charlie Sheen really carried 2 and a Half Men, which I don't think is quite the sick burn. he thought it was.
Yeah.
But it then led to this war of words between the pair of them in which John Cryer responded in this kind of really like pathetic way by going, well, actually, I won an Emmy for playing, you know, for the role and it carried on for 4 seasons after Charlie Sheen left it, which I don't think is the great retort he thought it was either.
No, probably not. No.
And then all
which one was he anyway?
He was not Charlie Sheen. I don't know what his name was. I never was. He was the father of the son. He was,
yeah, he
Charlie
was the other
Sheen's,
guy.
Yeah, he was the other guy.
Right,
he was the other man.
Yeah, yeah.
And the dentist. I think he was the dentist. I never really watched it. And, you know, maybe it was funnier than I thought it was, but it never looked funny anyway. And it led to this big war of words between them and all the former cast members, you know, piling on top of Matt Gaetz, and that's where they left it.
Okay, and did Charlie Sheen get involved?
So then, actually, John Cryer kind of felt like he had shaded Charlie Sheen, and he sort of then tweeted a follow-up saying, oh, and Charlie Sheen was really good on the show as well. So it was just all embarrassing for everyone.
Oh, dear. Right, and at a time when, obviously, having live audiences is very tricky, Top Gear are going to do it, or are they just ignoring social distancing guidelines, or have they managed some way around it?
They have managed some way around it in a way that I think is quite fitting for the show and the spirit of the show, because obviously the live audience segments are such a part of the fabric of Top Gear. And they decided that the way that they would get a live audience in would be to have a drive-through experience, or drive-in experience, rather, and have, you know, the petrolhead fans of the show come, have their temperature taken, and sit in their car or stand, or, you know, maybe sit on their bonnet, but distanced from each other. And that was how they were going to bring the live audience back.
Right. Okay. So are they going to do that?
They record on Tuesday and it goes out on Sunday night.
Right. Okay. And what happens if somebody comes in with a screaming temperature? Do they shut down the whole
thing? I imagine they politely shun you and go to plan B.
Right. Okay. We do have to take a break. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Two more shows to talk about after this. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. James Dempsey still with us. He was before the break telling us about Away, all episodes of which are on Netflix. And it wasn't a rave review, let's put it that way. Catherine says, I tell people to watch Away. It was a grand, easy watch. Well, I suppose it was. You can't fault her for that. And, you know, as I even though I was given out about it, I watched the whole thing. I just found I didn't care about any of the astronauts, says his texter. All the big tear-jerky moments left me as dry as a dusty wooden floor. Big budgets that do not deliver. Sam says, though, I love Hilary Swank. There's little she's in that's not watchable. As much as you're not selling the show, I know I'll watch it. She can do no wrong. Well, you're right, she is very watchable. In fact, all the cast are good. It's I suppose really it's kind of more a tonal thing, really. We finished it. We finished Away in a week. We loved it. Don't know what you watched. Jim says because it has been compared to Grey's Anatomy. Grey's Anatomy is the worst piece of crap TV ever commissioned. Though it's been running, Jim, for many years, and your woman in it is the highest paid, I think, actor in American TV. Laura says, though, on the other hand, you're so right. Grey's Anatomy is just excellent. I have been watching old episodes on Amazon and the storylines add up. It's not sexist or racist. It was as perfect 15 years ago as it is now, says Laura. And somebody else says, Shaw, never knew to hate something so much. Is it that bad? Well, no, it can't be that bad because I watched the whole thing. But I just kind of fell into a relationship with it where it was watchable. All the actors are very good. Hilary Swank's husband is played by, I don't know his name, is that fella, do you know his name, James? No. And the fella that was in The Good Fight, he was kind of the romantic interest in The Good Fight, and he's very good. Everyone's very good. It's just very saccharine at times. Plus there's, you know, one or two massive plot holes. Well, not even a plot hole. I'll give you, for instance, there's one where their disaster of the week, there's one thing that Josh Charles is his name. Thank you. There's one that they can do one of two things, and one is clearly aimed at saving their lives, and they decide to not take the save their lives route because somebody gives a speech to Hilary Swank about hope, and she goes, "Ah, yeah, you're right." Even though up to that point she'd said, "No, we have to live," but then she decided against it. It was that kind of thing where you would scream at the television. You really would. But I kind of enjoyed screaming at the television at the same time. Anyway, we'll move on to our second show of the day. It is The Southwesterlies. It's running on Sunday nights at 9:30 on RT1, and you can catch up on the RTE player. Here's a clip.
Absolutely, Kate. The position and all the associated benefits are still very much on the table, but there is one little, what's the word, a caveat, a proviso, a condition.
Yeah, I understand what the words mean. I'm just not clear what you're saying.
We need your help with the Westcorp project.
But Morton's already down there.
I'm doing my very best of it. But it's a very particular place with very particular people that requires a very particular set of skills.
I didn't sign up for that. We've always been talking about Ulster, not West Cork.
You will be joining Morten to assist him in getting the fine people of West Cork in line.
I want our wind turbines in that bay.
Right, that's the South Westerlies. It's running on Sunday nights at 9:30 on RT1, or you can catch up on the RTE player. James, given the premise of what this is, it could be potentially a very apposite political drama. Mm-hmm. It raises all sorts of issues that we've kind of seen in real life in this country. Does it do any of those things?
It is utter drivel, right? Yeah. It was, and I sat aghast watching it, because it just, what I couldn't believe is that there were a further 5 episodes of it to come, because the setup is just like a Hallmark Christmas movie. Like, you know, those made for TV trite Christmas movies where they get a career focused woman and she's mad about her career, and they were like, oh, you got to go back to that place where you have a checkered past and maybe sparks will fly, and she falls in love with someone, right?
Okay.
And you're 100% going to get that. What I thought was odd was there were a lot of opportunities to explore, and in my opinion, they failed to follow any of them through in an interesting or entertaining way. So I will say they have amassed a very good Irish cast, right? Orla Brady, who I had last seen in Picard, where she played a Vulcan very successfully. She was great in Picard.
Yeah.
Eileen Walsh is an estranged friend of hers. You have Jerry Ryan running a guest house. So a man named Sam Barrett plays Orla's grown up 18-year-old son. And they arrive together and they find out in the guest house, the two double rooms they've booked, there's been a mess up with the Wi-Fi, and suddenly they're sharing 2 twin beds.
Yeah.
And they do not explore that any further. You know, they kind of push the beds apart and that's put to bed. And you're kind of thinking, well, there's probably a few more jokes you could wring out of, you know, the awkward situation of a mother and her grown-up son sharing a bedroom together. Then she's walking around the town and various mysteries begin to, not mysteries, but sort of bits of her checkered past begin to emerge. And if you are not able to figure out the sort of, you know, the plot line of each one based on the very obvious foreshadowing they've done, you must never have seen a television show before, because it is just so clear as day where absolutely everything is going.
Oh, crikey.
The whole plot is driven by this idea that Orla Brady's Kate is this career woman working for this Norwegian, you know, renewable energy firm. They want to build a wind farm off the west coast of this town, Carrageen, I think, which it was actually shot in Wicklow, is my understanding. But anyway, and the locals do not want this eyesore put off the coast. And the Norwegians plan to influence the local town members by sending Kate as a, like, you know, a undercover agent into the town to incept them all with the idea and get them on board. And she has to get this in order to get this big promotion to move to Oslo. I mean, the whole premise is a bit silly, really.
Yeah,
because,
totally silly.
Because she has spent her whole summers of years past in the town. She knows people in the town. She is somewhat estranged from them for reasons that will become very clear, because everything is very clearly signposted. But along the way, you know, in the next 5 episodes, she's going to have to figure out how to get this. Now, what do I see happening? Do I see her having a change of heart or falling in love with the local people or whatever? Yes. Do they explore in any kind of substantive way what this might bring to the town? Or is this, you know, is renewable energy necessary, or any of these kinds of ponderous questions? No, it's all kind of Ballykiss Angel.
Well,
how are you?
That,
how are you? Blah,
God.
Blah, blah. Oh, aren't the Irish so great? It was actually so like Jackie and Irish nonsense that I kind of thought, and because it's partially Norwegian and definitely filmed in Oslo, as far as I can tell, on location partially, I thought, is this like a co-production between, I guess, RTE and NRK is the Norwegian broadcaster, or someone else, that like it is going to be, is it like a Ballykiss Angel type show?
Yeah.
And it is as yet unclear to me, but it just, as I said, it has all the hallmarks of a Hallmark type movie, which are deliberately kind of cheesy and bad, but they're less than 2 hours long, and the whole story wraps itself up, you know, fairly quickly. I just cannot see how they're going to get 6 episodes out of this. And they have obviously made them. So unless someone...
Well, maybe it'll turn into a sober and serious discussion about renewable energy in towns or energy companies in general.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of drama you could potentially wring from that premise. But obviously not in this case. That's a shame. Right. OK, we'll go move on to our third show of the day. It is I'll Be Gone in the Dark. It's on Sundays at 10 p.m. on Sky Crime or on demand on Now TV. Here's a clip.
I think the narcotic pull for me is what I think of as the powerful absence that haunts an unsolved crime. Murderers lose their power the moment we know them. We see their unkempt shirts, the uncertain fear tightening their faces as they're led into a courtroom. When I'm puzzling over the details of an unsolved crime, I'm like a rat in a maze given a task. And I mean that in the best possible way. The world narrows, the search propels. I felt, in the truest sense of the word, gripped. I had a murder habit, and it was bad. I would feed it for the rest of my life.
Wow. Okay. Is this the first person in that narration we've just heard? Is this a real person, given this is a true crime story?
Yeah. So it's a little bit complicated insofar as this is a documentary about a true crime writer who was a woman named Michelle McNamara, who died in 2016. And she was a true crime writer who created this website, which is called True Crime Diary, and a podcast, and became absolutely engrossed and fascinated by the case of the Golden State Killer, who was also known as Ear Ons, which is the East Area Rapist and original Night Stalker. And she, in her very... prolific, because she wrote a lot about him, and her very studious examination of the case didn't exactly crack it. She didn't solve it, but a lot of the stuff she did helped police to ultimately uncover the man who did this, whose name I can't remember, but he doesn't deserve it anyway.
Yeah.
Who was convicted maybe last year or the year before, after, you know, years and years. I think his first crime began in the 1970s. So what's interesting about it is she is a, you know, she passed away herself. So you've kind of got this unusual true crime drama. True crime is it's not new, right? Mm. What's unusual about this one is the murderer aspect is being unfolded through her investigations. And at the same time, it's a sort of fascinating look at this woman who was completely driven herself to solve this crime in as much as she did solve it, or to investigate it so deeply and to connect with other online sleuths and, you know, to start searching. One night she starts searching for like pawn shops online for like things that were taken as trophies by him and happens upon something. She has a very good investigative mind.
Mm.
The other thing that's kind of interesting about it is because his crimes were twofold, so he committed a lot of sexual assaults and he committed murders as well. A lot of times in true crime documentaries, the victims are women almost always, and they're usually dead. And in this one, a lot of his victims, because he committed about 50 sexual assaults, a lot of them are obviously still alive. And they interview them firsthand and they recount their stories as well. And it is just novel and right that the victims get their moment to express what it was like and describe really the survivors, I should say, sorry. Mm. The survivors get to say what the experience was like for them in as much as they want to. And it is very chilling and kind of reluctant to say interesting because I don't want to, you know, make
know.
A spectacle
yeah,
it's, of it.
It's, yeah.
But it makes it very, it very much, it's a riveting piece of television watching them. And they managed to create this whole character out of Michelle McNamara despite her no longer being alive.
Mm.
And that's done through taking the book from the source material, which is I'll Be Gone in the Dark, which obviously was written by her. It's the voiceover is voiced by Amy Ryan, who's an Academy Award nominated actress. She was in Gone Baby Gone. It's made by Liz Garbus, who made Whatever Happened to Miss Simone and Bobby Fischer Versus the World, I think. He's a very, very fine documentary maker. It's just a very polished, well-made, riveting piece of true crime that has extra nuanced layers of interest because its subject and the chaser of its subject are both these kind of ephemeral people because you know, the Golden State Killer, no one had him until they had him. Mm. And Michelle McNamara is now dead herself. So you can't get it from the horse's mouth herself. It's kind of interesting in that way.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting indeed. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Cheers.
Moncrief on News Talk.